So, continuing our theme of understanding the structure of Dinei Derabbanan, or really of rabbinic authority, so I'd like to share with you something interesting in a way that I don't think it's necessarily portrayed in other places, but I'd like to speak for a few minutes about a topic which I would have liked to have given you more makomus about, but again, technical problems, so you can look up these gemaras and the like later. But I'd like to talk to you for a few minutes about the topic of Akiras Davar Min HaTorah, the idea that Chazal are empowered, apparently, under certain circumstances, to uproot something from the Torah. And it happens to be, it's a beautiful sugya, and there is a wonderful, wonderful piece from Rabbanan Wasserman, which places things in a beautiful framework, which I'll share with you a little bit also. We'll see how much we can get done today. But what I would like to highlight, which is not so often highlighted, is just how directly it flows from what we've been talking about the past few weeks. And that, I think, is a whole different dimension, so hopefully we'll be able to appreciate that. So just to recap our major points, so we had been talking about where rabbinic authority comes from, and trying to understand from that not only what the sources are, which we have yet to say more about, but also to understand how does that affect the nature of rabbinic power. And I think, again, that's just something that needs to be focused on carefully because it isn't always focused on. So we understand, we know we're Orthodox Jews, so we know that we believe that the rabbis have authority to tell us what to do within certain contexts. So how far does that go is going to connect with the fundamental questions of what's this power about and where does it come from? So we've tried to highlight so far, for example, questions of do you build one gezerah on top of another, or what kind of need justifies the gezerah, may connect to the fact that you need to figure out what drives rabbinic power. So if we assume that Chazal are driven by a need to protect the Torah, so then we may have to ask, so what is basically necessary to protect the Torah? And what's too much? What's too little and what's too much? Apparently there is a Goldilocks factor there that has to be assessed. And there's also a general issue of what rises to the radar screen and what doesn't. But also just how this power is carried out. So we had noted the machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban, as to whether the pasuk in Shoftim this morning, I guess, judicial authority is very much on our mind. It would be a tremendous loss to American society if Justice Scalia over Shabbos, somebody who really highlights this question of where are the lines drawn between judicial authority and legislative authority, and the constant question of when is a judge empowered to say, well, the law is this, but I think it should be that. One of the major issues that's always being debated back and forth within the American judicial system, drawing from the fact that there's supposed to be a line between the two, that the judges are supposed to be charged with interpreting the law and only interpreting the law, and legislators, different people, are supposed to have the job of saying what they think the law should be if it isn't already. And the Rambam seems to conflate those two roles and say that the pasuk in Shoftim of Lo Sasser is giving both authorities to Chazal. They can authoritatively tell you what the Torah means, and they can also tell you what they think it should be and create new legislation to address that. Which also dovetails with the idea that the Rambam, when he talks about Torah Shebaal Peh, and this is something, God willing, maybe in future weeks we'll get much more into, he gives you five different components of Torah Shebaal Peh, and they're kind of split evenly between that which becomes a part of Torah Shebaal Tzav, meaning that, or has a status of deraisa is a better way to put it, that it merges with Torah Shebaal Tzav, meaning that it's essentially a explanation of what the law is, and that which has a status of Dinei Derabbanan, which is basically Chazal telling you what it should be, even if it wasn't yet. So that's all consistent with Rambam's view that Chazal have the power to do both. And that that is the role of Divrei Sofer. Now again, the Ramban will agree also that the power exists to do both, but just not necessarily that it comes from that pasuk. So we still haven't dealt with the question of where does it come from, so that we'll probably have to deal with another day. What I want to illustrate here is how does this question connect to Akiras Davar Min HaTorah. So the main point, just to recap from our previous week, is that there was a discussion that if the Rambam believes that all of the authority comes from Lo Sasser, so how does he justify distinguishing between Dinim D'Raisa and Dinim D'Rabbanan? How can we say that Safik D'Raisa L'Hafmir and Safik D'Rabbanan L'Hakel, if they all basically are Torah concepts, in fact, Torah prohibitions? So among various approaches, we noted the idea that just because the authority comes from the Torah doesn't mean that we don't see two distinct roles. And we gave the mashal of a principal and a teacher. We know that the teacher's authority comes from the principal. It's because he's backed up by the principal. That's why he can exert authority in his classroom. But we still understand that the teacher and the principal are two different people. No one would think that whatever the teacher says, it's the same thing that the principal speaking. So to here, we can understand that the Torah gives the authority to the rabbis, but they're still different entities, and therefore the rabbis, what they say, is different than the Torah itself saying it, and it's valid to distinguish between how these laws play out. So an outgrowth of that, or a possible outgrowth of that, was the suggestion that when it comes to Doraisas, we can be talking about an Isser Chetza. So if somebody eats non-kosher food, that's Asur Min HaTorah. So then there is a spiritual blemish that comes along with it. That even if one were to do an Aveira B'Shogeg Min HaTorah, so that could still create a need for a kapara, for an atonement, because there's a spiritual impact. But an Isser D'Rabbanan, that possibly should be viewed as an Isser Gavra, meaning that the individual is prohibited to, let's say, eat the chicken cheeseburger. But the chicken cheeseburger itself is neutral. That's what we call an Isser Gavra. There's no inherent significance, because the rabbis don't have control over objects. The rabbis control what we do. We are obligated as Jewish people, let's say as Jewish adults, to listen to rabbinic authority. So they can tell us, don't eat the chicken cheeseburger, and we have to listen. But they can't change what the chicken cheeseburger is. If it was neutral spiritually before, it's neutral spiritually now. And that's an approach that's been associated with the Nesivos HaMishpat. Many others took that view as well, and some disagreed. We mentioned Rabbi Yosef Engel, who brought sources from Chazal to indicate that when the rabbis make an enactment, so then God signs on to it. God endorses it, and then, yes, it actually does change and becomes inherent in the object. So the chicken cheeseburger, even if it was neutral before, it can become inherently bad because the rabbis sign on to God signs on to the rabbinic enactment. Okay, so far so good. That was essentially what we said last week. It is somewhat of a subtle point, so if anybody wants me to explain anything more, please speak up. I think you more or less understand that. Yes, everybody's good? Okay, so with that background, so now let's consider the following question. The Gemara tells us in the Maseches Yevamos, in Daf Pei Tes, in Daf Tzadi, that there is authority to the rabbis, Yesh Koach Bidei Chachamim, La'akor Davar Min HaTorah. That we could have thought that rabbinic authority only exists in the neutral zones, in the zones where the Torah doesn't speak up one way or another, so then, okay, the rabbis could prohibit more things than the Torah prohibited. But, or command things the Torah didn't command. But what if the Torah commands something? Can the rabbis tell us to do the opposite? So says the Gemara, yes. Yesh koach la'akor davar min ha-Torah. And it's a dispute in the Gemara whether they could do so even what's known as bekum vaseh, could they do so even actively? Which sounds like it means that if the Torah says, don't eat treif, the rabbis can come along and say, eat treif? Or does it mean only passively, which sounds like it means, for example, if the rabbis say, if the Torah says, do a certain mitzvah, the rabbis could say, don't do that mitzvah. And that seems to be how we paskin in the second way, yesh koach lakor davar min haTorah, b'shev al tas, only passive. Okay? So far, so good. And just for ease of example, the most famous example of this, even though the Gemara doesn't explicitly say it is an example, but this is the one that's discussed most often, is blowing shofar, taking a lulav on Shabbos. That as far as the Torah is concerned, you blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and it doesn't distinguish between Shabbos and weekday. Whatever day is Rosh Hashanah, the first day of Rosh Hashanah, you have to blow shofar. Whatever day is Sukkot falls out, the first day of Sukkot, you have to take a lulav and esrog. As far as the Torah is concerned, it doesn't matter whether it's Shabbos or weekday. But the rabbis came and said, not so fast. We're worried about Chilul Shabbos. We're worried that you're going to have some question. You're going to take the shofar or the lulav to somebody to ask about it. So because of that, they said, let's not do these mitzvot on Shabbos. So that seems to us like an example of this klal, that the rabbinic authority extends even to this point where you could not only prohibit more than the Torah prohibited or obligate more, but even apparently contradict the mitzvahs of the Torah. And if you recall, a few weeks ago we mentioned that some had suggested that that's pshat of the pasuk, lo saser yamin u'smal, and that Chazal say, even if they tell you right is left, left is right, which prompted the whole question, that what, even if they're wrong you have to listen? So some had suggested, no, not if they're wrong. If they know they're contradicting the Torah, if they say, yes, we know the Torah tells you to do this, they go right, but we're telling you to go left. That authority exists as well. So how does this work? How does this make any sense? And first of all, so what do the words mean? How does the process work? So here, there is a beautiful essay by Rabbi Chanan, which we'll make reference to a few times, but we want to focus on some different points of it. Rabbi Chanan's essay was published in at least two places. If you're familiar with the Sfarim that we have from Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, so they're probably a little bit mislabeled, we have a sefer called Kovet Shiurim, which is mostly a short Ha'aros, on many different Masechtas. And we have a sefer called Kovet Ha'aros, which are very lengthy developed Shiurim, on the Sechas Yevamos. So I don't know how the labeling got switched. Somehow we park in a driveway and drive in a parkway, and the Kovet Ha'aros is all Shiurim, and the Kovet Shiurim are all Ha'aros. But so the sefer Kovet Ha'aros on Yevamos, there is a very beautiful and elaborate shiur on this topic, on the Gemara and Yevamos over there. And it's also published elsewhere that in the sefer Kovet Shiurim, which is mostly Ha'aros, but there's also a kuntres there called Kuntres Divrei Sofrim, where he has about five essays about topics of rabbinic authority, and it's there also. So it's in the Kuntres Divrei Sofrim, and it's also in the Sefer on Yevamos. So there, he poses the question. He poses a three-part question, and part of the elegance of this piece is that the three questions all ultimately tie into each other. And I don't know if we'll get a chance to talk about them all today. We have to continue it into next week, and I'll give you the sources to see. Hopefully my computer will allow me to before next week. But let's at least try to talk about his first question in the time that we have. His first question is, what does the phrase mean? Yesh koach lakor davar min haTorah b'shev al tasah. So the language is very strong. Right? Yesh koach lakor davar. You can uproot something from the Torah. So is that language precise? In other words, what do we mean when we say the rabbis can tell you don't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, that happens to be Shabbos? So should we understand that to mean that they have actually uprooted something from the Torah? The Torah says there's a mitzvah on Rosh Hashanah, even if it's Shabbos, to blow shofar, and the rabbi said, no, no mitzvah anymore. Or should we say, no, there's no such authority given to Chazal. What this concept could only mean is that they can tell you not to blow shofar on Shabbos, despite the fact that that will put them in contradiction to the Torah. So you'll have the Torah's mitzvah to blow shofar, and you'll have the rabbis telling you not to, and they'll both still be there. See the two models? In other words, and this is a question that's discussed in many, many Sfarim, it's often pointed out that Akiva Eiger discusses this in his Drush V'Chiddush to Ksubas. Many, many others talk about this. Let's say you would decide, I'm going to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah anyway. I'm a Torah Jew, not a rabbinic Jew, and therefore the Torah says, blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. I'm not going to let those rabbis tell me what to do. I'm going to blow the shofar. All right, so you violated rabbinic law. Did you fulfill the mitzvah of shofar? Or should we say, no, the mitzvah is gone. There is no longer a mitzvah of shofar on Rosh Hashanah when it's also Shabbos. Yes, sir.
How does this connect with when you violate a mitzvah?
Mitzvah of Avi Aveir. All right, so that's an important question. So it happens to be, since you're asking, that I'll tell you now, there actually are three different ways to look at this question. Probably we'll come up with more. But there are at least three different ways to look at this question. Way one is to say that the Torah says it's a mitzvah. So even though the rabbi said not to do it, if I do it, it's a mitzvah. The mitzvah is good. Okay, I violated rabbinic law, but I fulfilled the mitzvah. That's one way to look at it. The other two ways all say that you're not fulfilling any mitzvah when you do this. But there are two different ways to come to that conclusion. One is to say that the rabbis removed the mitzvah from the Torah. They rewrote the Torah. So now, there is no longer a mitzvah of shofar on that day. Or lulav on that day. That's way number two. Way number three is what Arya just alluded to, is that we have a concept of mitzvah haba bi'aveira. We know that sometimes if you do a mitzvah, but you commit an aveira in the process, then that takes away any mitzvah accomplishment. So one could ask, does that principle exist even if the aveira is evolved, is an aveira midrabanan? So if you say yes, that could be a third reason or a third approach, that maybe it's not a mitzvah, not because Chazal took it out of the Torah, but because they created an aveira midrabanan, and maybe an aveira drabanan is enough to say mitzvah babi aveira. So that is indeed a third way to look at it. Okay, everyone got that? Either you are mekayim mitzvah, you're not mekayim mitzvah because it's gone, or you're not mekayim mitzvah because it's a mitzvah babi aveira midrabanan. The first one is that you are mekayim mitzvah, that the Torah said the mitzvah is there, so it's there. The rabbis told you not to do it. It was wrong to do it from a rabbinic perspective, but you can't erase the fact that the Torah said there's a mitzvah to blow shofar in Rosh Hashanah. So that will still be a valid mitzvah according to that approach. So many achronim ask this. You can find a big discussion about this in the Kavi de Kashese. I think I've mentioned what the Kavi de Kashese is, right? The Sefer from the Chavdes Yoav, where he has 103 questions. So this is discussed in many different places. It's a big issue. It's got a lot of implications to it. Rabbi Chanan himself, who asked this question, he also notes that there is a interesting hypothetical in the Sefer HaEshkol, one of the Rishonim, which probably touches upon this question. Sefer HaEshkol asked the following question. It's very interesting. It's very subtle. One case where the Gemara does apply Yesh Koach Laker Davar Min HaTorah, we said before about Shofar Rosh Hashanah is the most well-known example, but the Gemara doesn't explicitly say it's an example of this. But one case where the Gemara does invoke it is the following. Min HaTorah, the halacha is that tzitzis overrides shatnas. If you have a linen garment and you need to put wool on it in order to attach tzitzis, so the din of the Torah, based on Psukim, is that tzitzis is more important than avoiding shatnas, and therefore you should do it. You should put tzitzis onto this garment, even though you're going to create shatnas. But the Gemara says in Menachos that the rabbi said, don't do it. They were okir in this mitzvah. They said, ignore what the Torah says to put tzitzis on this garment, and worry instead about the Yisr Shabbos. And the Gemara has a few reasons why, that maybe they were worried that you would wear this garment at night when there's no mitzvah of tzitzis, but there is a prohibition of shatnez, so you'll have shatnez without tzitzis. Or maybe the garment will rip in such a way that you won't be obligated in tzitzis, but it'll still be subject to a prohibition of shatnez. There were various considerations that they had, so they said, as a matter of policy, don't do this. Don't put on tzitzis to it. Instead, worry about shatnez. So the Eshkol asked the following question. We know that shatnez is a law in the Torah, is a Torah prohibition. So if you violate shatnez, you'd normally be chayiv malchus, connected to a Sanhedrin tavla. So what would happen if somebody were to say, again, I'm a Torah Jew, not a rabbinic Jew, so I think I should wear tzitzis on this garment. I'm going to ignore the rabbinic prohibition, and I'm going to wear tzitzis. And thus you will create shatnez by doing so. Are you chayiv malchus for shatnez in that case? What do you think about that question? What's the reason to say yes? What's the reason to say no? Are you?
So the reason to say no is that the Torah allows it, and the Torah is the one that's declaring if you get malchus or not, so therefore you don't get malchus.
Okay, right? So it seems like it's saying, listen, the Torah policy is that the mitzvah of tzitzis, you have to explain this part also for it to make sense, but you're right, that the Torah rule is the mitzvah of tzitzis overrides the isser of shatnez. So therefore, I'm not violating shatnez. Jacob?
Isn't there also an inyan of malchus derabanan?
Yes, but let's assume. Let's
be putter from malchus derabanan.
You might be 100% right. You might be 100% right about that as a practical point. And just to try to understand along with this question, let's leave malchus derabanan out of it. You're right, that might be the case. So, assume on a deraisa level, are you chayiv malchus or not? So, Aryeh is right in explaining what one of the tzadim is, that you could say that, look, the Torah says tzitzis overrides it, so I'm following that, tzitzis overrides it. So, yeah, I violate rabbinic law, but I'm not in violation of shatnez, that's chayiv malchus. Morty?
So, that would be because if the one rabbi said not to do, I mean, they got rid of that Torah's heter to do.
Oh, so you see, that's the same, it seems like this is the same question, right? This is the same question that you can ask about whether, if you blow shofar on Shabbos, are you mekayim the mitzvah or not? So does the mitzvah still exist, just we're told not to do it? Or do we say, no, the mitzvah doesn't exist, the rabbis got rid of it. So there's nothing to fulfill. Or just another version of that, saw some contemporary posts can discuss, let's say it's Sukkot, the first day is Shabbos, and in violation of the Din Rabbanan, you took a lulav the first day of Sukkot. And then on Sunday, the next day, everyone else in Shul is taking a lulav for the first time. And they're all making a Shechianim. Should you make a Shechianim? Should we say this is the first time you're doing the mitzvah that year? Or we say, no, you were Yotzei yesterday. You shouldn't have, but you were. So it seems like it's the same question about shatnez. Do you say that the mitzvah is there? The mitzvah of tzitzis is there. So you were wrong to do it. You violated the Rabbanan. And maybe Jacob's right. You should get Makas Mardis. But you're not going to get Makas Deraisa because the shatnez was outweighed by the tzitzis. Or do we say no? Like Morty's saying. It can't be outweighed because there's no mitzvah of tzitzis anymore. The rabbis took off your tzitzis. And if they removed the mitzvah of tzitzis, so there's nothing to make this any different than normal shatnez, and you're just as guilty as any other person wearing shatnez. Hi.
Can't we say that there's a little bit of a difference between the case of the shofar and the lulav in this case,
Okay. Tzitzis,
in which the prohibition against taking your lulav or taking your shofar is not based on the, it's not on the shofar itself, it's on the fact that we don't want you taking it out.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to blow it, you know, good job, you just blew the shofar.
Mm-hmm.
But by tzitzis, it's on the tzitzis itself, and that we don't want you wearing the tzitzis, so yes, you might not, you know, we don't want you doing this, but if you do it in the correct way, maybe it's not such a big deal. But by the shofar, it's like, you blew the shofar, you don't get a bear for just blowing the shofar, you know, good for you.
That's a good point. I mean, you're right that the Gemara Taka does have a distinction, and we're talking about tzitzis, whether tzitzis is a chovas gav or a chovas mana, which is a little complex, maybe a little bit outside of scope here, but you're right that one could investigate that distinction and say that maybe tzitzis has a unique relationship to the object, which might drive a difference here. It's an interesting point. But whether that's a fair distinction or not, we're not sure. But on the surface, it seems relevant to say that there's a comparable question here. So what I'd like to highlight for you is that it seems like this question is a direct outgrowth of what we talked about last week. How do we view rabbinic authority? Do we say that it means that the rabbis can only exert their authority on Jewish people, I mean Jewish adults, and therefore the Torah can tell you, don't blow shofar on Shabbos, but they can't say there's no more mitzvah of blowing shofar on Shabbos. Just like we were discussing last week, just like the Nesivus' assumed position is, they can't create an Isser Chatzah, because they have no authority over the chicken cheeseburger, they only have authority over you. So too, you could say that they have no authority over the Torah. If the Torah says that there's a mitzvah of shofar on Shabbos also, and there's a mitzvah of tzitzis even with Shabbos, then that mitzvah is still there. The rabbis can't do anything about that. But if you say, like Rav Yosef Engel, that God signs on to their enactments, and therefore the chicken cheeseburger could take on a chefza status, then maybe you could say also that the Torah is also going to agree. So you see, this is the same question as that. Do you say that rabbinic authority is all about the Jewish individual listening, that nobody outside the Jew, nobody or nothing outside the Jewish individual is subject to this authority? Or do we say no, that because God endorses it, that therefore has an impact on objects, has an impact on the Torah itself, the structure of mitzvos itself, and that's all going to change? It's a fascinating question. So just, we have to end in a few minutes, but just to also illustrate, this has a flip version too. What about positive mitzvos? That we have positive mitzvos, which are mitzvos min haTorah, and the rabbis sometimes tell us to do them in a more involved version. It's not necessarily a siag like we've seen till now, but the rabbis have added on to the obligations of the mitzvah. So does that change it on a daraisa level as well? So just to give two common examples, Kiddush. We have a mitzvah of Kiddush, which, at least in its fully developed rabbinic form nowadays, requires us to say Kiddush on a cup of wine and a Makom Suda. But it's very possible, many of the Rishonim would assume, that the mitzvah min adov min haTorah of Zachar Shom HaShabbos L'Kadsho doesn't require all that. It might require much less. So let's say you make Kiddush without being Makom Suda, or without having a cup of wine. So we know that by rabbinic law you have to do more. But do you still fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush min haTorah? Has many practical implications, by the way. Maybe next week I'll fill in some of the practical implications. Let's say you bench, and you don't say four brachas of benching. So at least the fourth bracha of benching is in addition to midrabbanan. But benching is a level, is an obligation. Can you say that at least Minatori fulfilled something? Or do we say no? That rabbinic legislation comes and changes it, and now even on the level of Minatori, you're not in fulfillment of anything. All right.
And that question influences how we, some people say you shouldn't say Tzor Mishloah.
Yeah, it's a good point. So what Ari's point is, in the interest of time, I'll take over your sentence mid-sentence. But Ari is saying that there's a practice some people have not to sing Tzor Mishloah in the middle of a meal because they're concerned there might be a fulfillment of benching min haTorah. Because included in Tzor Mishloah, you say Tzor Mishloah achalnu, Baruch Hu, right? So you're saying it's a chalta b'shabbat v'raft, and maybe that's a fulfillment of blessing the one from whom you ate. So who cares if it is a fulfillment? So we have a general avoidance. We don't want to split our mitzvahs in half. If we have a mitzvah min haTorah, so we want to do it, which is enhanced midrabbanan, we want to do it in one shot. We don't want to do the mitzvah min haTorah and then later on fill in the details midrabbanan. So I'll tell you a quick story about that. So I was once giving a shiur where this topic came up. And I mentioned that people have paid not to say Tzor Mishalo because it has this phrase, Tzor Mishalo Chalmud Baruch Hu, and maybe that were comments to be benching in the Torah. And then I realized that the shir was in the context of a meal, and where everyone had washed and had not yet benched, and I just actually brought about that question by saying this phrase. So I assume that there's room not to worry about it, because probably ain lecha negative kavana gedol mizu, that I'm explaining as I'm saying it why it might be a problem. So I think that should suffice to be negative kavana, that should not bring up the question. But there are many ramifications of this question, so in the interest of time, I can't go through them all, but maybe next week I'll give you some amrakomos to look at, and I will tell you about what some of the implications are. Just mention quickly, if I can stuff this in, that many point out that it seems to be a machlokas, Tosfos and the Ran on this point, because in the Maseches Sukkah, so you have a Mishnah which says that min haTorah, somebody who is eating in a sukkah, but his table is in the house. He had it set up so his table and his plate are in the house, but he himself, Rosh HaRuah, his body is in the sukkah, that's okay. But the rabbi said it's not a good idea, because we know that a man follows his dinner table, so chances are you'll end up pretty soon eating inside. So midrabanan, it's no good. So the Mishnah says that there was a time when some of the students, unity trip, the students that they still lend, Beis Shammai, visited someone on Sukkot, and they saw him eating just this way, that is also midrabanan, but it is good min haTorah. And they said to him, "Imkein ha'isa noheg, if this is how you always do it, this is how you have all your meals, lo kiyamta mitzvah sukkah miyamecha, you've never fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah." So the Rishonim asked, "Really, you've never fulfilled it? But min haTorah, it's good. Midrabanan, it's a problem. So why would they say that the mitzvah min haTorah of sukkah you've never fulfilled?" So it seems like it's machlokas Rishonim, that Tosfos over there at Sukkah Daf Gimel, Tosfos says that, yeah, the rabbis are able to change the mitzvah, and now if you do it in a way that violates this rule, even on a Torah level, you're not yotzein. But the Ran says that no, it doesn't mean that. It means that you haven't fulfilled it perfectly. But we can't say you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah, because min haTorah, what you're doing is acceptable. And this Ran is L'shitasa, or the more well-known comment that you're all familiar with, because he interprets another statement like this, the statement that we say Pesach night, where we quote Rabbi Gamliel, and he says, "Kol shlo amar shlosh dvarim elu lo yatsi de chavoso Pesach matzah umar." He says, if you don't say those three things, you have yotze your mitzvah of Haggadah, of the Seder night. So the Ran there says the same thing. He says, no, it doesn't mean you're not yotze, because min haTorah, you're not obligated to say these things. So therefore, you are yotze mitzvah min haTorah. But it means that you're not yotze perfectly. Don't take it literally. Now, one could put a finer point on this Ran and say, maybe say it differently. Don't say you're not yotze perfectly, but say you are yotze 100% a mitzvah min haTorah. But a separate mitzvah drabanan, you're not yotze. So one could quibble with the language of the Ran, but this essentially, this machlokas, Tosfos in the Ran, seems to highlight this question, which is a fundamental issue. Again, there's so many nafkaminas to this, so we shouldn't give it short shrift. So, God willing, next week I'll give you some marmakomos to look at so you can see the things inside, and we'll continue this, what I think is a fascinating discussion. Okay, so we'll try to dab quickly so that I can hold in a minion. Who wants to dab for us? Are you want to dab for control? Okay.